I have a short opening story for you today, and it's about this kindergarten teacher that was working with her kids, and they were reviewing the Ten Commandments, and they had just finished the one about honor your father and mother, and then the kindergarten teacher stood up and she said, okay, can anybody tell us if there's a commandment that tells us how we're supposed to act with our brothers and sisters? And a little boy in the back of the room immediately jumped up and he says, yeah, Dad says it all the time, thou shalt not kill. But I really shared the story today because these are the two commandments that we're going to be covering today. Honor your father and your mother, and you or thou shalt not kill. And when I first thought about this a couple of weeks ago, I said, I guess I'll be giving two separate short talks. But then when I prayed over it and began to work on it, I realized that these two commandments contain a very important single common thread, and that is the sanctity of life. The commandments are really interesting, and we're doing this series on breaking the Ten Commandments. And there's a thread that runs through all of this that really is so much related to how we think in unity. The trouble is the languaging was just so ancient. So even if we take that first commandment of, I am the Lord your God, you shall not have strange gods before me. And you think about this and move just a little bit in consciousness and you say, you know, there's not a whole lot of difference between that and what we pray every week when we come together and we pray that affirmation that there is but one power, one source, active in the universe and in my life, God the good. But I want to get back to our two commandments for today and that common thread about the preciousness of life. And it was about a year ago, maybe a little bit more than that, I was out walking my dog and I came upon a scene that a car had pulled off of the street onto the curb and embedded into some bushes. And the car door was open, and on the ground next to the car, there was this elderly woman. And she was obvious in some very serious medical stress of some kind. And there was a young couple there, and the couple had actually pulled her, removed her from the car. And they were busy trying to attend any way that they could. The young lady had already called 911, and the young man was kneeling beside this woman on the ground, beckoning her to her to hang in there. And it was pretty obvious he wasn't all that familiar with CPR, but he was doing the best as he possibly could and was literally trying to breathe breath back into her, because if she was breathing, it was barely at all. And the young lady had run down the street to meet and greet the ambulance and the EMTs to make sure that they were directed to the right place to go. I didn't know what to do, frankly, so I prayed. Later on that day, I would cry. And some of my tears were about the concern and well for the lady. And frankly, I don't know to this day if she lived or died. But most of it was a release of emotion that had been pent up in the realization how incredibly precious every single life is. And I was overcome with emotion and how remarkably this young couple just responded and dropped whatever was going on in their lives, and they had this single focus of trying to do anything that they could to preserve this human life. And back in the days when I was in seminary and I was doing my internship at Research Hospital in Kansas City. Research Hospital was a major trauma center. So all kinds of patients came through that door. Whites, African Americans, Hispanics. Some patients were drug addicts, some were alcoholics. Some were victims of violent crimes, gang fights in the streets, and even barroom brawls on a couple of occasions. But for the EMTs that brought these people into the emergency room, and for the team in the emergency room, none of these particulars were of any consequence whatsoever. None of these demographics played any kind of a role in what took place. Again, they had this single-minded focus. of doing absolutely everything that they possibly could for the preservation of life. And in some instances, it was really kind of obvious that if they were successful, that preservation was going to be for a day or two, or maybe even for just a few hours. But again, it did not matter. And again, I stood back. And I was just filled with a sense of wonder. And I came away with a great appreciation. 911 is not just an emergency service. It is a living testimony. It is a living manifestation of a very deep-seated understanding that we all have, way down deep within, about the preciousness of life and how we have to do everything that we can to preserve it at all cost. And your reaction to what I'm saying here might be, well, yeah, of course, why don't you tell us something that we don't know? But if you think about it, there might be an argument made that it's all a little bit impractical. Every time an ambulance is dispatched, it's costly. And every time that an emergency team in the emergency room has to rally and come into action and involve all sorts of equipment to do testing and to preserve bodily functions, thousands of dollars are expensed. And so maybe somebody could present the case that if we were to take that same time and energy and money and place it elsewhere, maybe it would do a lot of good, because after all, we know in so many cases, we're just buying a little bit of time. What's the sense of it all? So if you're sitting there now and you're having a reaction that you want to jump up and jump out of your skin and shout out at me, you don't get the point. You're missing the point. Then my response to you would be, that's great, because you get it. You understand deep within your heart how incredibly important every single life is, and that every life matters, and that every moment of every life is dear. The commandment, thou shalt not kill, is more than a prohibition of murder. And perhaps it's a language that occurred at a time when awareness was a little bit less than it is today. And Eric Butterworth in his book says that it's a language for the spiritually immature. So maybe it's kind of akin to or analogous to a father coming into a room and saying, hey, 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 I've told you before, punching and hitting your brother and sister is not allowed. But in both cases, there's that underlying message that life is to be honored, respected. Life is to be revered. And we see this expansion in consciousness in the words of our way shower, Jesus, when he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, hey, simply not killing is not enough with regard to the sacrament. That if you so much as are angry with or insulting to one of your brothers, you are liable for breaking this commandment. But to really understand the underlying message of this commandment, we have to bring it home. We have to relate it to ourselves. We have to relate it to our own consciousness. We have to apply it to ourselves in a way in which we understand that every day throughout the world, thousands of people literally are killed. And for the most part, we really don't have a whole heck of a lot of control over the situation, at least seemingly. But there is one place where we do have control, and that's within our own awareness. The one life that we have the greatest access to, the one life in which we can most determine whether there should be life or death is our own. And if you're wondering if I'm talking about your physical life or your spiritual life, the answer is both. Our spiritual being was made incarnate so that our spiritual being could become incarnate. Let me repeat that. Your spiritual being was made incarnate so that your spiritual being could become incarnate. Well, that sounds a lot of hocus pocus gobbledygook, and what the heck is it supposed to mean? So let me try to explain. Very often we fall into that business of making a distinction between our humanity and our divinity. And lately in Unity, there has cropped up a phrase which kind of makes me, you know, winch a little bit. And that phrase is that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. And the reason that I wince about that is, to me, it seems to denote a separation between those two realities. And I think that we are here to eliminate the boundaries between those two realities. I think that we are here to eliminate the separation, the distinction between those two dimensions. And I think that we are here not to eliminate our humanity, but to illuminate it. We have a choice in this whole process. We can, and we sometimes do, choose to kill ourselves off by our negative thinking or by our neglect. You know, every spring, Susan and I go out and we buy plants to put around the house, to adorn the house and make our home beautiful. And we do so with an understanding that there's a responsibility now to nurture and foster those plants. And it's probably going to mean watering them virtually every day throughout the summer. And if it gets away from us, the plants suffer and sometimes they even die. We too need to be watered. And Jesus, when he met the woman at the well, spoke of a water that brings eternal life, and that if you drink of it, you will never, ever, ever thirst again. We too need to be nourished by that water. And the way that we gain access to it is by tapping into that font deep within. And if we do this, and if we are replenished by that water, then we will continue to grow, and we will continue to blossom, and we will continue to bloom. And all of it will be a manifestation of that current of life that runs through each and every one of us. But again, it's a choice. We could choose a pattern of thoughts that allow us to heal and to regenerate, or we could just allow ourselves to slowly die off. And what a waste of the preciousness of this gift. Maybe we should change the wording of that commandment from "thou shalt not kill" to "thou shalt live, and thou shalt live abundantly, and thou shalt manifest your greatness." So what does all this have to do with the second commandment that we are looking at, the commandment of honor your father and your mother? Well, I'm going to talk about a scenario that we're probably at least somewhat familiar with, and maybe we've heard about it, witnessed it, or maybe we played a role in it at one point or another. And that's a time when a very young child really kind of loses it in a fit of anger and rage, shouts out words like, "I hate you. You're not my mother. You're not my father." And I openly confess that when I was a young boy in the middle of a tantrum, I said mean words very much like that. And I can still today see the look of pain that fell across my mother's face when I did that. And even now when I'm talking about it, I still feel that cringe with some element of guilt. And I bring this up because this commandment too speaks about the preciousness of life. And you know, there exists this incredible bond between a parent and a child. It's a beautiful, powerful, spiritual bond. And in some ways, it's almost tangible. It's a bond that might motivate somebody who had been adopted and had been given a beautiful home and a wonderful life to one day go out and fulfill a quest of meeting and reconnecting with their biological parents. It's a bond that brought this country to its feet in a bit of an uproar a few months ago when we learned that immigrant children were being pulled away and separated from their parents. You are here. I am here. We are here as a result of, as a manifestation of, a powerful, beautiful, creative process. We are here together because of a holy parenting. Now, I'm fully aware that that parenting process that we have experienced as children maybe fell short in some instances. Maybe what we experienced from that parenting process was a bit lacking, in some cases, maybe even abusive and destructive. But the reason that we felt pain and hurt in those circumstances is because deep down inside, we understand that's not the way it's supposed to be. On a very subtle, knowing, intuitive level, we are aware that life is supposed to be nurtured, that life is supposed to be loved. But regardless of what our experiences have been as children, at some point we have to step up and take responsibility. And yes, parents are supposed to be the conduits that give life and then the conduits that support and nurture and foster that life. But at some point, we have to own it. And then the decision is upon us as to whether or not we're going to nurture and love it and foster it or let it go away and drift away someplace to die. And I point all of this out because on the flip side of things, just as we are all children, there's a level in which we are all parents. And as parents, we are called. We are each mothers and fathers called to procreate, to create life. And the extent of the power that comes with this parental archetype is not limited to just bringing babies into the world. That power extends to breathing life into absolutely every situation, every moment of our life, and everything that we do. It extends to our work, it extends to our play, it extends to our health, it extends to our relationship, it extends to our prayer practice, absolutely everything. And so this commandment, honor your father and mother, has a much more far-reaching effect than just sending or receiving Hallmark cards on Mother's Day and Father's Day. It is an active call to engage in this gift of life and to live it fully and as extensively as possible. But there's a bit of irony involved in it. There are paradoxes involved in it. Because sometimes the observance of these two commandments actually calls upon us, requires us to kill. And even to kill our parents. And before anybody gets excited, let me make clear, I am speaking metaphorically here. Okay? Years ago, when I was a young man, a teenager, a very important mentor in my life, told me this. He says, at some point you have to kill your parents. And then as I grew and thought about this, I came to realize that really what he was talking about was the need at some point to kill off those ideas, those thoughts, those experiences in our life which hold us back, hold us down, which frustrate us, which anger us, which prevent us from moving forward, which has caused scar tissue. And we are all familiar with these kinds of thoughts. They come in that list of "you're not good enoughs," or "you should be," the list of "you should be a scared ofs." This is what our way shower was talking about when he said, "Unless you hate your mother and hate your father, you cannot be my disciple." And he would go on to say, "Call no man on earth your father, because there is only one father, and that is the one that's in heaven." We all have this mothering and fathering and childing instincts within us. And is all about not just the preservation, but the nurturing and the blossoming of this incredible gift that we've all been given. Years ago, when I was living in another house, right at the corner of this house was this evergreen tree. And I loved that tree, and I would watch it over the course of a few years, and it was growing and becoming more beautiful. And then one day, it just looked kind of sick. And then it got worse a couple weeks later. So I called a tree expert out, and he went and looked at the tree, and he brought me the sad news. He says, "I'm sorry, your tree is dead." And he said what happened was, when the tree was planted, they failed to remove the plastic and the canvas that was surrounding the roots. So it was okay for a while, but at some point, it just choked those roots off and the tree died. You all have roots. And you are alive. And it's not too late. You can go about the business of removing anything that might be binding and choking off the vitality that you are supposed to know and the vitality that you are supposed to enjoy. And you could water those roots freely by tapping into divine substance that, again, emanates from that fountain that lies deep within each and every one of us. You're not here to suffer. You're not here to endure pain. You are here to know life and know it more abundantly. And so this is the invitation that I give to you today in thinking about these two commandments and just how fortunate you are to be here at this time, at this moment, with complete power to make decisions, to do everything that you want. And yes, it's a lot of responsibility, but it's also an incredibly awesome opportunity. And so one last piece of advice. Every once in a while, send yourself a Hallmark card.